This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 17, All About Boots. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we really geek out about cricket boots for fast bowlers. And we've got two guys who know plenty about that kind of thing. Mark Garraway and Sam Lavery join me as always, as we also discuss what brand of cricket really means, and we help a player who is weak on the pull and hook shots. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, whether that's coaching or playing. There's 30 minutes of fun for you to enjoy and then take away to your next session and get yourself a little bit better. My name's David Hinchliffe and I look after things here. And I am joined, as I am every week, by, first of all, the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Hello, how's everybody?
Fantastic, thank you. And alongside him, or virtually alongside him, I should say, because he's in a very different part of the world, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David.
So it's cricket season, which is fantastic for us in our part of the world. And one term that I've been hearing a lot recently that I wanted to chat about a bit was this phrase brand of cricket, which seems to have come about in recent times. It sounds good, an exciting brand of cricket when coaches say it on the telly. But I was wondering if it actually meant anything. And if it does mean something, how can we apply it to the teams that we play in or the teams that we coach?
I'm not a fan of the term, I have to say. It's a bit of hot air as far as I'm concerned. Because everybody's talking about it, isn't it? This brand of cricket, this exciting brand of cricket. But by virtue of win and losses and form and performance, obviously not everybody plays it because, people do lose and people don't get it right. So I don't like it, to be honest. I hear it a lot in international cricket. I hear it a lot on telly and it doesn't really mean anything. All we've got to do as coaches and as players is look to play better cricket. However good we are and however well we perform, we need to make sure that we keep doing the good things and see if there's any areas that we can improve on. So brand of cricket for me, I wouldn't say I ban it at school, but I'd always have a conversation with coaches that talk about a brand of cricket, because to me it's just white noise.
Yeah, I guess, when you're saying brand of cricket, you're applying a term which is quite difficult to define in the first place. So you have to be very clear about what you mean by the word brand, don't you? Because that can mean different things to different people and not everybody agrees. But if you say we want to play an exciting brand, everybody nods. It's like saying I believe in democracy, isn't it? Or freedom. It's easy to say that, but let's work out the details first.
It's got to be, isn't it? And I think everybody's looking for the same thing. And I can't imagine for one second that Sam isn't looking for people that run up and bowl in hit line and length, who bowl to hit the stumps, that have people that are athletic in the field and can dive around, batters that can hit powerfully, hit confidently, but also know how to take quick singles. I mean, we're all looking for the same thing, really. So when an individual coach starts talking about the brand of cricket that they're trying to develop, it, to me, it's a hollow thing, because everybody, I should hope, is looking for the same sort of things. So I'd be disappointed if Portsmouth Grammar School weren't looking for similar things to Millfield and vice versa.
But that said, Lavers, brand may be a difficult word, but certainly coaches are one of the key things that coaches are encouraged to do is develop their own philosophy around how they coach and the style that they coach in. So is there a case maybe that brand of cricket is more to do with the style that the coach is taking to their own teams?
Possibly, yeah. I think the mindset that they approach with is maybe related, and that may be one of the ways people define brand of cricket. What kind of mindset are we sending our players onto the field with? I'm not sure really, because I think people is one of those terms which isn't necessarily defined particularly clearly yet. It's used a hell of a lot. So as Gareth said there, I don't think many people are looking to do different things. I don't think people are necessarily saying we want to go out there and be boring or be defensive necessarily. I think people want to go out and be positive and play exciting cricket. So is there a great variation across it? Well, maybe this exciting brand of cricket means that we go and play regardless we play attacking, which is that the best way we're teaching players to play? Should we teach people to be adaptable rather than just gung-ho?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? You know, we were talking about in our training session yesterday, we were talking about what conditions are going to be like for the first league game of the season, and you know, everyone expects the ground that we're going to be travelling to be a wicket which is particularly poor, and you know, it's traditionally that, and considering the time of year as well, I mean, conditions have been good, but it looks like it's going to be a slow and a low wicket, which is going to be hard to score. If you go in by saying we're going to have an attacking brand of cricket and you start trying to smash it round all over the place on one of those type of wickets, you're not going to get very far, are you? So But is there a case then to say, rather than saying the word attacking brand, you're saying we're developing an adaptable brand of cricket? Or is that still words which really mean nothing?
Well, I think it does mean nothing, because if you take the word brand out of that sentence, what you're doing is having a normal conversation about what's coming up. So it's a planning meeting, isn't it, really? You know, you're going to go to a ground where some of the shots that you've been playing over the course of the last couple of weeks in different conditions probably aren't going to be as effective, and equally your lines and lengths are probably going to straighten up as a bowler, bowl to more 5-4 fields rather than 6-3 fields, and you'll adapt according to me. To me, that's just a good cricket discussion, and we don't need to necessarily put a flowery term around it that actually means nothing other than a good cricket discussion.
Yeah, that is a very good point. And it goes back to that idea of, you know, you need to be very clear about what you mean when you say it rather than what sounds good. There's often a difference between those two.
Is brand of cricket just a media term, which is a way of wrapping up someone's win or someone's loss in one neat, tidy package, when ultimately a lot more went on than a brand of cricket? There was a lot more to it than that in throughout the game, and that led to the result.
I don't think it is a media term, Sam, and I think the media have got hold of it, because a number of coaches around the world, when they've been interviewed, have talked about it. And I think this is where, I mean, I love looking at business, for example, to get some ideas of transferable things that can come into our game and into the way that we review and plan. But sometimes the terminology that's used in branding and vision and all of those sort of things that we hear about from big companies that are obviously trying to outdo their competitors doesn't always sit what is in the fairly basic world of cricket. And we have been criticised over the years, particularly in this country, ECB, of becoming a bit too business speak-like. And I think this is an example of business speak that doesn't actually add any value to cricket. There are some business things that we can take and then adapt into cricket to make it part of cricket. But it concerns me when I hear coaches talking in a business fashion rather than talking in a cricket fashion, because ultimately we're cricket people playing a cricket game.
Right, let's finish up this discussion now with a yes, no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the members of the team want to say. I've got the three questions this week, so let's get going. First question, selection policy is inherently unfair.
No.
No.
Second question, I'm just having a hit.
No.
No.
Third question, there's more to cricket than measurables.
Yes.
Yes.
On this section of the show, we read out a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners. The idea being that those questions get answered as best as possible by the team, and then we pick a winner of a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So a couple of people have sent in their questions, the first of which is Ahmed. And Ahmed's got a problem. He says, "Hi, coach. I have a problem to discuss with you. I am weak at pull and hook shots. Each and every time I try to play the pull or the hook shot in a match, the ball hits the top edge of the bat. I am caught many times this year. But in practice, I rarely miss pulling the ball. Why can't I do the same in the match? Is there any solution?"
Okay, good. Well, I think we, if you look back through the last few months, we do have a number of episodes where we've talked about the differences between the training environment and the performance environment, or your matches. And there have been a number of people who've struggled with certain things, whether it be batters or bowlers, that they've done very well in training. So first of all, I would point you in the direction of a few previous shows, because I'm sure there's some really good information in there. Secondly, I think we need to try and identify what is the difference. So is there a variable, if you like, between your training situation, your match situation? That could be a physical variable. So that may be that you're opening the batting and you've got a brand new ball against you, so you're taking on a harder ball than you are in training. It may be the pitch conditions, that the match surface is a little bit harder, a little bit faster, and a little bit bouncier than what you play on in training again. So there could be a physical change straight away which will cause that change to the outcome of the shot you're going to play. There could also be something on the mental side of it as well, in the way that your confidence comes, or your conviction through your shot, or your or the manner in which you think. So I think there's lots of different things physically and mentally we can consider. I doubt if we'd find any obvious technical changes if you're so successful at something in a training environment. So one of the things we talk about a lot, first of all, is speak to the people around you. So see if there is anything obvious from a technical point of view that is different. And it sounds unlikely that that would be the case, because a lot of those technical skills will be pretty ingrained in what you're doing. So then we look at the physical aspects, that speed and bounce of pitch or new ball or whatever it may be, or the mental aspects. So is your decision making being used as effectively in a match situation where there is a little bit of pressure on you as it is in a training environment? So speak to the people around you and just ask them, actually, was I playing the shot at the right time? Am I making my decisions as clearly as before? Am I pulling the ball from the same height or the same line? And there are a number of variables that you can consider there, which hopefully will sort of get you started. Which of the variables it is very difficult to say, but that's probably a starting area for you, at least to try and get you going and get you considering what may be different, because ultimately the one thing we know is something is different. It's then exploring what the change is that needs to be made.
Well, firstly, Ahmed, I'd say you're not weak at pulling hook shots because you can do it in nets. Then I'm going to go slightly off topic and say, in my experience, it's less common for somebody to be able to hit the balls, those types of deliveries, in nets and not be able to take it in matches than the other way around. And the reason why I say that is often when we're facing those types of deliveries that are bouncing up towards our chest and towards our head, in a match situation, we're full of adrenaline, aren't we? Because we've got a bowler that's running up and bowling relatively quickly, quick enough to get it into those areas, and we're in a very competitive situation. And that isn't always the case when we're in nets. And certainly somebody like Michael Vaughan, when I used to work with him, used to struggle to play the pull shot in nets and the hook shot in nets against his own mates and his own teammates, because he didn't have quite the same amount of adrenaline flying through his body. And yet, as we know from watching him play over the years, the hook and the pull were two of his greatest shots, and along with his extra cover drive, I suppose, are the ones that we all remember. So it's rare for it to happen in the way that you're doing it, but please remember, because you are doing it in practice, you are able to take it in. And there's often a mental block, and I know Sam just touched on that as well, of when you get into those games. And probably the thing that I would suggest is that you look at your pre-delivery routine in order to try and clear your mind a little bit. It sounds as if your mind is a bit cluttered, And as a result, you're getting a bit late onto that pulling hook that you would normally hit in the nets, and the ball's hitting the bat. So effectively, the ball is meeting the bat rather than the bat meeting the ball as you are within your nets. That can only come down to a little bit of white noise that we've already talked about today, but the white noise that sits in our brains and limits our movement patterns in our most efficient way. So have a look at your pre-delivery routine. So think about what you do after you face a previous ball. Can you take yourself away from the crease, just outside of the popping crease? And then when you walk back in, you only walk back in when your mind is quiet enough and you're ready to face the next ball. Somebody like Nick Compton talks about being emotionally ready and mentally ready to face each ball that he faces. Okay, and often we're reviewing the previous ball, or we might have some thoughts in there about what's likely to come, and all of those things will get in the way of us moving most effectively when the ball is released out of the hand, and it sounds as if that's happening to you. So I would get really good in your practice and then really good in your games at having a consistent pre-delivery routine where you take yourself away from the crease, where you clear your mind and you only come back into setting yourself in your stance when you are ready, where you feel that your mind is clear enough to be able to react to any of the stimuluses. If you couldn't play the pull shot, you wouldn't be doing it in the nets. It's just clearing that mind to give you the best chance of hitting it when you get into a game. And I'm sure you'll be telling us in a few weeks' time that it's going well.
Are we slightly assuming a reporting issue here? You know, the fact he said, I never do it in a game and I always do it in practice. It's probably a lot closer than he thinks when it comes to never and always.
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah, probably is. Perception of that situation, I think, is probably an interesting one to look at, isn't it? Because whenever anybody says never or always, the chances are that it is never or always a fairly remote, aren't they? Because there's normally somewhere in between that. So, that might be the case. But the bottom line is that we do get never and always questions because people are looking for help. And the start of any process is somebody being ready to make a change, of somebody to be ready to move to the next place. And I applaud Ahmed for doing that.
Maybe a good process for him to go through would be actually to ask someone to just do a little bit of basic analysis on that pull and hook shot from a training session and just record his success rates in training and his success rate in matches, just to get an actual real factual view of how successful he is and what he is actually doing. Is he as successful as he thought, or is he maybe misinterpreting the situation?
That will be very helpful, because when you are in a situation like that, then often it can feel like you're always getting it wrong, even though, you know, with a bit of analysis that you find out that actually it's not as bad as you think it is. That's got to be a help to you in coming out of the other side. Because it doesn't matter if it does feel like you're always getting it wrong. If it feels like that to you, then that is what's happening to you, right? Until you know otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's your experience, isn't it? That I'm completely with you on that, mate. It's your experience. And I think Sam's suggestion about getting somebody else to look at it from the clearer perspective rather than your own perspective is a good one.
Next question is from Meat. Meat's got a very, very specific question. I'm not sure we'd be able to give him a very specific answer, but perhaps we can talk around the general topic. Meat says, I'm an aspiring fast bowler of age group under 19s, and I bowl around 125 kilometres an hour. And I hit my front foot hard. What shoe should I buy for my state games? Is it Asics Gel Speed Menace RI8? I am confused between Asics Speed Menace and New Balance CK4040. I know we're not product specialists here, but that's an interesting question. He's looking into such granular detail over his boots, which is, I guess, a good starting point.
Great question. First thing I would say is I think you should be wearing the same boot or the same boot types in state games and club games and any games that you're playing, to be honest, because you want your point of contact with the floor, which is obviously so key for a fast bowler, because you're going to be using all of that ground force that you put down into the floor and then get back up through the kinetic chain. So you need to have a consistency in your landing and a consistency in your shoes that are on the floor. And between the two, I've got no idea, to be honest with you, because I wouldn't even be able to tell you what those two brands look like, let alone how they feel on your feet. And again, we come back to, I suppose, that personal preference element that we talk about a lot. So give them both a go, stick them on your feet, see which ones feel the best for you. And I'm sure that there are sports shops around you where you can do a compare and contrast job. You're not going to be able to take them away and bowl in them, obviously, but you'll be able to walk in them and you'll get a feel for that. But somebody who's pretty experienced in this type of thing is somebody called Jeff Lawson, who played for Australia, great fast bowler, coached Pakistan. And I remember he talked to a group of young bowlers that I took over to Australia about the importance of footwear and the things that he looked for within your feet. Obviously, you want the shoe to be strong, and there was a tendency a few years ago to have almost a basketball boot or a trainer with spikes on it, as opposed to a fast bowling boot. And obviously, the thing that gets compromised in those circumstances is your foot plate is likely to be mobile and flexible, which you don't really want. You want a consistent foot plate. So a nice rigid bottom works well for fast bowlers, because you won't be getting all of that movement within in your foot. And also having really good heel and ankle support as well, particularly if you're going to be playing state games. You might be playing 2-day, 3-day, even 4-day cricket, where the footholds do change, and the more stability you've got around your ankles, the better, because you don't want to put those under any more risk than they already are. So those were things that were very important to him. So I'd look at both pairs of boots, or even others on the market, and have a look what the foot plate is like and what the stability is like around the heel, and in particular the ankle as well. And Jeff talked about having the shoelaces tied tight, so the shoe is very much part of the foot rather than the foot flopping around. He talked about having different layers of socks in there as well, and finding what you feel good, because obviously blisters come into play. He talked about individualising your boot by cutting a hole in the toe if your big toe is whacking into the end of it. And then also stitching, getting a cobbler to stitch around that hole that you make, so it makes it more robust and less likely to split, which will save you on buying multiple pairs of shoes over and over again. He talked about having the same pair of shoes twice, so you've got one which you're playing in games with, and the other one which you maybe are breaking in, just in case you get a problem with that boot or one of the boots. And also, he created a little toolkit, and this was something Andy Caddick had when I was with him at Somerset. He had a little box with lots of different lengths of studs in, because then, depending on the grass length or the condition of the pitch he was going on, he could apply the best amount of sprigs on the bottom of his shoes to get the best amount of grip. He would have different tools in there for tightening, different tools in there for cleaning the bottom of the shoe, because obviously the better the spike is cleaner, it's going to get more grip onto it. And also glue that he could stick boots back together with, and all of that sort of thing. So to me, it's having a look from a stability point of view, but then also giving yourself a chance by having two pairs of the same shoe, so you're breaking them in, and then creating a kit for yourself that you can maintain these boots on the go. Because you might be in a great spell where everything's feeling good, and then you might get a tear in the side of your boot. Are you able to mend it? Are you able to put on another pair of shoes that feel exactly the same? So rather than telling you the difference between those two models, hopefully I've given you a bit more experience in what some of the best fast bowlers in the world have gone through when they've had these bowling boot challenges facing them.
One thing you can do if you are comparing brands, I guess, is to look at... have a look online and find out the experiences of the build quality of different brands and different types of shoes. That's a helpful addition as well. If you can't get to try them on necessarily, maybe you are looking to order them online. That's not ideal, but if that's your only option, then you can have a look at, try and find some reviews and see what the build quality is like of them. Because you know, if you've got a more sturdy boot that requires less repair, that's going to do you better in the long run.
I think there are a few things to consider, and loads of them have been talked about there, which is fantastic. One of the key things is going to be support. Another one is going to be the cushioning that you get from your shoe. And obviously that's going to differ slightly depending on your physical makeup. how you hit the ground, which sounds like you hit it with a lot of impact, and also what you play cricket on, so the surface. So if you play on a very hard surface in a part of the world where there's a lot of pressure going through your body, then you need to make sure you have an appropriate level of cushioning within your shoes. And if you play up north, as I used to do, then there's maybe less a demand for cushioning and more a demand for stability and traction with the spikes in the bottom. Personally, I would say that there are all sorts of different cushioning systems on the market. I used to sell trainers when I was young, so I know a little bit about it. More so in the running trainer world than the cricket spikes world. But with cushioning systems, obviously with Asics and New Balance and Nike and Adidas and da-da-da-da-da, there are numerous different cushioning systems. But what we're looking for is a stable cushioning system. So something like a Nike Air system doesn't hold the same stability if it's a classic Nike Air bubble, as if you can picture that, as a gel system with Asics, where the stability of the shoe is actually a lot better because it's not built on an air system. Also, the other things we've said stability-wise, Gareth has already talked about ankle support and heel support. That will also be backed up with the way in which a midfoot harness, which is basically where the laces are on the shoe, is wrapped around. So if you think about a classic Adidas shoe that has three stripes on it, and the three stripes aren't actually a coincidence. The three stripes are actually the midfoot harness that is the makeup of the shoe. So the laces are attached to those three stripes on this either side of the shoe, which are made of a much stronger material, and they grab the shoe and bind it in really, really tightly. And that holds your foot in place, again, stopping the sliding, stopping the movement, which stops, first of all, the banging of the toe, but also the friction that can cause the blisters. Main thing I'd be considering is, what's the cushioning system? How well is my ankle and heel supported? How well is my midfoot supported, and which would allow me to tie my laces appropriately tightly? And also, how well does it fit? So you're looking for at least a thumb's width in the end of your shoe to make sure that you've got appropriate space for any movement you do get, but also any swelling of your feet, which you'll no doubt have after half a dozen overs in the heat.
Well, that is pretty comprehensive. I'm hoping that, Amit, you're going to get something there, even if we couldn't give you a specific recommendation between those two types of boots. Perhaps you can be a little bit closer to your aim of finding the perfect shoe to get you those wickets. Soapbox time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. 60 seconds of uninterrupted monologue from one of the team. And this week on the podium, it's Mark Garraway. Over to you, Gerrers.
I got a great question from a parent at the weekend who said that a sign of the weakness of a Millfield programme that we put in place was the fact that players go and get their coaching in their counties with their county academies. And initially, I was a bit baffled by that because I see that as a strength that we're working collaboratively with our partners. But then I thought, well, hang on. I obviously haven't explained that process well enough and how the ECB, it's National Player Development Model, works and how we work within that. And I should imagine it's pretty much the same all over the world, where players are going to individual coaches and scared to go elsewhere, or it's deemed to be a weakness if there's more than one coach involved. But obviously, there's going to be, particularly with a talented player, lots of coaches and lots of clubs and lots of schools and lots of different teams being played for, and it's important that the parent at the centre of it, because they're the only constant, understands the player development model that any player is working in. And that's down to us coaches to educate. So initially I got annoyed, and then afterwards I got annoyed at myself, because I obviously haven't presented how my team or my club or my school works within that process. And as individual coaches, we've got to make sure that we make that clear to everybody, to educate everyone.
And that is the end of the show for this week. Hopefully there's been some useful tips in there for you. And before we go, we're just going to decide on our winner of this week's coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had two questions, one from Ahmed about pulling the ball, and one from Meat about helping him decide what kind of shoe to buy. Which one did we prefer this week, Gareth?
I love them both, but I'm going to go with Meat's question about bowling boots. And I think we answered it really comprehensively. And I learned something today about why those Adidas stripes are on there, Sam. So thank you very much for that, Meat. And thank you, Sam.
Every day is a school day, especially on this show. Now, you can send in your own question to the show if you want to get it answered and hopefully win that prize. Gareth, if someone wanted to do that, how could they send in the question to us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. We are also available on social media. Our Twitter is at pitchvisionacad. And our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Lots going on there all the time. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can do so by subscribing in your favourite podcast app. iTunes is a popular one, but you can use just about anything that you can think of. And if you want to go onto our website to stream the show instead, you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link in the bar at the top. And you'll have the option there to stream it if you're on your computer, or links to lots of different podcast apps if you're on some kind of a mobile device. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labus.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.